There's something out here.
Holy hell.
You think it's a UFO?
The next level of the Jordan Peele experience arrives.
Yeah, nah. Run!
I don't think they think you. Yeah. Keep you on lookout.
No.
Don't look.
Yeah. It's not what you think.
Nope.
Written and directed by Jordan Peele. In cinemas now.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. This episode is a special one. It's a preview of the 2022-23 English Championship season. And here we are in the week leading up to the start of a new season. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, looking at the Championship, this is a league that both you and I watch very often. You do a lot of reporting for Talk Sport, sometimes twice weekly, calling in and sharing your opinions and thoughts and analysis about the English Championship. And on the World Soccer Talk podcast, oftentimes we'll mention the Championship just for a second or two, but we don't get a chance to actually dive deep into this league. And it is, for me, I mean, my club is in this league, so it makes it a regular occurrence for me to watch this league more often. But still, even if Swansea City was not in the Championship, I'd still be watching this league. What for you, at a high level, what for you is intriguing or interesting? What compels you to watch the Championship more than some of the other leagues out there, Kartik?
Yeah, I watch it more than I watch most First Division. So I would say, first off, is the level of competitiveness. There is not a huge gap between the team that finishes sixth in the league and makes the promotion playoffs and the team that finishes 22nd and gets relegated, right? Okay, so there are some outliers always in the league. Maybe the top two teams, top three teams are really good. The bottom one or two teams are really bad. But there's a competitive balance that you don't get in most leagues around the world. Now, proponents of MLS would say, well, we have that competitive balance, but there's promotion and relegation, and there's not much of a gap between being in the fight for a promotion playoff spot and being in a fight against relegation in this division. Again, there's some seasons that are different, but for the most part, consistently, the gap between 5th or 6th and 17th isn't very much. And in fact, when I'm on Talk Sport regularly, this is always a talking point almost every week is, hey, look at the table. It's so competitive. It's so crunched up. And there'll be teams that start the season that are in a relegation fight. And you think they're in a relegation fight at Boxing Day and they end up getting promoted like Nottingham Forest did this past season. And there are a couple other examples of that historically, of that happening. And I think number two for me is the tactical variation. What I've found during the course of the last few years particularly is that and I think this trend was started by Ian Holloway at Blackpool when he got them promoted back in 2010. You're seeing clubs that play some expansive, free-flowing football, and they're in a position where they can afford to do that because you're in a league where results are at a premium, but it's not like the Premier League with Liverpool and Manchester City the last few seasons where if you drop any points at all, you're out, right? In this league, you can drop points, as we saw Bournemouth do regularly last season, and still get promoted. So you have that. And then on the other end, you have a lot of clubs that still play traditional English football, right? Lump it forward, use a target man as a number nine, or play with wingers that are quick and just cross pump crosses into the box, into the area. So you have this tactical variation. You have all things in between those two, right? You're seeing more counter-pressing in the league. You're seeing more foreign managers in the league. You're seeing some of the really good budding young continental talent in the league, guys who are coming through the championship, guys from Denmark, from France, from the Netherlands, coming Portugal, coming through the championship and then making their name in the championship and then becoming stars in the Premier League or Liga or wherever they go after. And then you have, I would say the final point, lots and lots of guys who are either internationals now or become full internationals. Yes, it's a second division, but if you look at the England national team, depending on the squad Southgate selects, at various times the majority of them had played in the championship. And in fact, you could say the majority of really their elite players have played in the championship, right? There are a few exceptions. Guys like Raheem Sterling and Marcus Rashford were elite at 17 or 18 and never played in the championship, were never loaned out or never started at a championship club. Actually, Sterling did start at QPR, but they were in the Premier League at the time and never played a first-team game for them before they moved to he moved to Liverpool. But you see the core of the England team, as the pool has deepened, being more championship and football league heavy than it's ever been in terms of guys having previously played in this division. And that wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago when, quite frankly, the squad selections were confounding, right? And were limited to big clubs and limited to reputation.
Yeah, so we will get to a preview of as many as we can, hopefully all 24 teams in this championship season, which begins Friday, July 29th. And we'll get into the TV side of things and streaming side in a little bit. But for me, Kartik, just two things here before we kind of dive a little bit deeper. Your example of England and a lot of these players for the England national team coming through the system, coming through championship clubs and moving up to Premier League clubs and beyond is a good one. Another example is Wales. Wales is the first opponent to the United States in the World Cup in Qatar in November, as we know. Most of the Welsh team play at the championship level, with some exceptions, of course. There's some players that play at the League One level also. So what you get is a lot of quality. And that's the second point is this is a really high-quality league to watch. So if you're watching the championship, not every game's an amazing one. And to your point, Kartik, there are a lot of different styles. Some are very pragmatic. Some of them, like Huddersfield, are very, direct. And some are tiki-taka. You get a whole bunch of different styles. And oftentimes, actually, even during the course of a game, you'll see that the style's changing, too, in terms of managers making decisions to change it. But all together, I really like watching this league because the quality is very high. It's exciting. It kind of combines the best of the American and British side. And what I mean by that is that the British side, in terms of promotion, relegation, sporting merit, a long season, the winners are decided based on that season, combined with the American playoff model, which would be once the season ends and you have teams 3 through 6, they go into a playoff and then ultimately into a playoff final to determine who gets who's that third promoted team to the Premier League. So I don't have anything negative to say about the championship. It's a fun league to watch. It is long, and that's a key thing too, because I think for a lot of soccer fans who watched the Premier League, we try to watch as many games as possible. Sometimes as many, we can watch them all if we want to. There's 380 games a season. But in the championship, there's 24 teams, not 20. So that means in the course of a season, the Premier League has 380. The championship has 552 games in a season. So oftentimes the best thing to do, either to cherry pick the games you want to watch or pick a team and follow that team throughout the course of a season. Because if you try to watch everything, it's almost impossible. You can't do it. And we'll get into the TV side in a little bit. Speaking of the TV side, Kartik, let's talk about that first, because like here we are, we're recording this on Tuesday, just a few days before the championship season. I think a rule has to be made between the sports leagues and broadcasters worldwide, is that going into a new season, all the deals, the TV and streaming deals, have to be done at least 2 weeks before the season begins. Because what happens, and we've seen this even with the Premier League and an ESPN deal that came back in the The 2000s, right? Yeah, where it was like the night before the first game of the season, ESPN did a deal overnight, and we broke the news. But here we are; it's Tuesday. A deal has still not been signed. So what it looks like, and we have the full article at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into more detail. So ESPN is close to signing the deal with the Football League for the rights to the English Championship, League One, League Two, and I believe also the FA. So also I believe it also includes the FA Cup and also the League Cup, if I'm correct in that. But what it means is that the deal has not been signed yet. And so according to my sources, even if the deal isn't signed completely, ESPN will still go ahead and broadcast the games, at least for the opening weekend of the season, to make sure there's continuity. But until the deal is done, we can't say it's 100% done. But it looks very likely that ESPN Plus will retain the rights to the English Championship and League One and League Two. And something a little bit different, though, Kartik. This Friday, the opening game of the season, Huddersfield against Burnley. What's different about this, and what does it mean?
Yeah, so this match will be on ESPN2 in the United States. So it's going to be on linear television, the first championship match on linear television since the days of BN. But really, the first championship match on linear television in a big way, right? Because previously it's always been BN, and before that, Fox Soccer Channel, right? These very kind of niche tier 3, tier 4 channels. So that's really exciting. And in addition, I would say the matchup couldn't be better, right? It's Huddersfield, who were just maybe a controversial call away from being promoted to the Premier League last season. Remember, lots of controversy in that championship playoff final against Nottingham Forest, although ultimately I think the better team did win. But there were several questionable calls, all of which went Forest's way in that match against Burnley, who were relegated on the last day of the season because Leeds United defeated Brentford, right? So you have a newly relegated team against the team that lost the playoff final in the first match, and it's on linear television in the United States. Although one quick point, Huddersfield's best player, in my opinion, last season was Lewis O'Brien. Ironically enough, sold this past week to Nottingham Forest, who beat them in that playoff final. So he'll be in the Premier League this year. And I think that means Huddersfield probably takes a step back. But best possible matchup, really, when you talk about the championship to start the season. And it's going to be on linear television in this country, which is really, really exciting news for all of us.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also going to be on ESPN Deportes and also ESPN Plus. So there's definitely plenty of options. But to have that game on ESPN2 is a massive deal for the championship and for the English Football League. It'll be interesting to see what the viewing number is for that match. You mentioned Huddersfield losing a key player. They've also signed Tino Angerin from Chelsea on loan again. So he's back at Huddersfield as an attacking midfielder. Hopefully we'll see a lot from him this season because it's a player that's highly rated. Now, Kartik, we have a question from one of our listeners, and that's from Corey. Corey says, what are the teams and players that folks should tune into for these matches this season? It's a great question. And let me go first, just for me personally on this one. And I'm actually really interested to see how Vincent Kompany does as manager of Burnley. This is a great opportunity for him. And we've seen how successful managers in the championship have been able to get their clubs promoted to the Premier League. For instance, or actually even hired as a manager, hired by a Premier League club after showing his worth as a manager in a championship. And for example, some just examples of some managers that have plied their trade in the championship and either got promoted or hired into the Premier League. Those managers include Brendan Rodgers, Thomas Frank, Graham Potter, Frank Lampard, Eddie Howe, Steve Cooper, and David Moyes. There's a lot of managers that have earned their basically badges, so to speak, at the championship and gone on to bigger and greater things. So for me personally, I'm really interested to see how Burnley does with Vincent Kompany as the manager. But Kartik, what about you? So what are the teams and players that folks should tune into for these matches this season?
Yeah, I'm really curious about Burnley also. But the two teams I'm most curious about this year are Middlesbrough under Chris Wilder, first full season. He has an opportunity, I think, to get this team back up in the Premier League with the squad they have, with the system he's put in place, with some of the signings they've made. And so I think they're definitely a team to watch. And then I'd also say Stoke City, who were in the Premier League for a very long time, right? I think 10 or 11 seasons consecutively, finished in the top half several times in that period, right? Finished ninth, finished eighth under Sparky, under Mark Hughes. I think they made Europe once under Tony Pulis. They have a shot to get back up this year under Michael O'Neill, the former Northern Ireland manager who got Northern Ireland to the Euros in 2016 and so close to the World Cup in 2018. They've made a number of interesting signings, most notably probably Dwight Gayle. I mean, there's several good signings Middlesbrough made, but Dwight Gayle may be the guy that really stands out, who has a history of scoring goals in this division with multiple clubs and has been okay in the Premier League. Let me rattle off a couple of players I do want to keep an eye on, because I think there are guys that every year there are people who come out of nowhere that end up stealing your attention in the championship. Last year it was Brennan Johnson at Nottingham Forest. Obviously now he is a Premier League player, so he's not on our list. But a couple of guys I'd keep an eye on, and this is subject to change, is Brereton Diaz at Blackburn. Had a fantastic season last season, the Chilean international, and almost got Chile to the World Cup, right? And he gets capped and starts really helping his national team also. Chris Willock is a player, Joe Willock's younger brother, that I really like at Queen's Park Rangers, a guy who can do it all on the attacking end, a really smooth number eight. Ismail Assar is a guy that was injured a lot last season for Watford in the Premier League. I think the relegation will help him. It helped him a couple of years ago when he was at Watford previously. And then maybe a little bit of an ode to you, Ben Cabango, coming into a World Cup year, Chris, at Swansea City, Welsh international. I think he's a guy, when fit and when on his game, is really worth watching. So that's just a few players. There are many, many more, and there are probably a ton of players that are not on the radar right now that will emerge as really good players. Sorba Thomas at Huddersfield, another Welsh international I keep an eye on.
Yeah, and there's definitely an American angle too, if those who want to watch some of the American stars. And it is really interesting, Kartik, going into the World Cup here and just months away, I think 117 days or something like that to the World Cup. And you've got some of the U.S. men's national team goalkeepers hoping to start in the World Cup playing in the championship. So at Middlesbrough, you have Zach Steffen. At Luton Town, you have Ethan Horvath, who's joined the club from Nottingham Forest. And Horvath is going to have his work cut out for him, because this Luton defence is known for leaking goals. It conceded 55 goals last season, even though they ended up in sixth place and almost got promoted to the Premier League. They got into the playoffs there. So what's your thoughts on Zach Steffen and Ethan Horvath, and how much playing time you think they'll get, and how will they find the championship? Is this going to be a breeze?
Yeah, in the case of Horvath, Luton were a well-organized team that were very close to going up last year under Nathan Jones, who was a very, very good coach. I know some people judged him by his two-month stint or three-month stint at Stoke where it didn't go well, but both his stints at Luton, he's been money. So I like that move. I think that's a real opportunity for him to play in an organized team whose defense isn't necessarily the most technical. So he can help them out a lot and maybe make a case for Greg Berhalter that he should be the number one in Qatar. The other situation is Zach Steffen, who we saw in his few opportunities at Manchester City was fairly mistake prone, although I think a lot could be said also for some of the defending in front of him in a few of those matches, particularly the FA Cup loss to Liverpool last season. I think it was one of the shocking defensive efforts City has had. He has to improve with his feet, right? We saw some of his mistakes at Manchester City have been with his footwork. Chris Wilder requires his goalkeepers to be able to play really well with their feet. And it's not a coincidence that goalkeepers who played for Chris Wilder at Sheffield United then moved on and emerged in the picture for the England national team. So two of them, right? In Ramsdale and in Dean Henderson. So those are guys that can play out of the back, right, and are really good with their feet, and they fit into what Chris Wilder was doing at Sheffield United. That's why it's a really interesting move for Zach Steffen. It could be feast or famine. If he thrives under Chris Wilder, he's the number one in Qatar and maybe the number one long term. Like I said, England are going to take three goalkeepers themselves. They're in the U.S. group. Two of them have played, I think, two of them. We'll see who Southgate selects. But based on what I think he's going to do, two of those guys are guys that really developed under this manager. So it's a great move for Zach Steffen when you think about it that way. I know a lot of American fans just judge and say, oh, he's moving down to the championship. Again, that's a lot of, I think, uninformed stereotyping, and they're not even looking at the club and the manager he's playing for in that analysis.
Yeah, the championship is definitely a tough division, a tough league for sure, and you get so many games thick and fast, so it's very common to have, you mean, a game on a Saturday or Sunday, and then you play a midweek on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then you play again on a Friday, like Saturday or Sunday. So with so many games and with 24 teams in the league, and with the international break because of the World Cup and other international breaks too, there's a great opportunity to get high level football week in, week out, and sometimes two or three games a week sometimes. So it's certainly not going to be a breeze for any of the players, but for Zach Steffen and Ethan Horvath in particular, it's going to be a great test. I mean, they're going to get a lot of really good opposition coming at them. And it's an opportunity, really, especially with these games being on ESPN2 and some of the games on ESPN+, to get a lot of exposure, too. And that's the thing, though, too, going back to the TV side just for a second, too. With ESPN+, they don't show every single game. And that's always the frustration for soccer fans who want to watch more of the championship, is that ESPN, if and when they sign this deal with the Football League, will show every single game that's available. Well, the English Football League doesn't make every single game available to international broadcasters or domestic broadcasters to watch. If you're a fan of Middlesbrough, or you want to become a fan of Middlesbrough, and you want to watch Zach Steffen every single game, home and away, now ESPN Plus will show a bunch of those games, maybe two a month, maybe, or maybe three a month if you're lucky. But for the other games, you have to subscribe to Middlesbrough's streaming service through their official club website. A lot of the clubs use a kind of a product called iFollow. But if you want to watch Middlesbrough home and away, you subscribe to iFollow or whatever their service is through their website and ESPN Plus. Now, if a game is on ESPN Plus, it is not going to be available through your club streaming service. So, and vice versa, if you're a viewer in the United States. So it's not cheap by any means. So for example, Kartik, yesterday I just got an email from my club, Swansea City, saying like, hey, great news. We're getting ready for the new season. It starts this weekend. To subscribe to the streaming service is going to be £170 for the season. So roughly, that's what, well over $200 to subscribe to have access to most of the home and away games for Swansea City. Any of the games, the home and away ones that are not going to be shown on that streaming service, is going to be on ESPN Plus, which is going to be increasing the price to $10 a month in August. So it's not cheap by any means, but if you do want to watch, whether you want to cherry pick and watch some of the best games through ESPN Plus, or if you want to go more hardcore and subscribe to a streaming service through the club, it's worth the money, but it is a lot more expensive than watching even the Premier League or Champions League or La Liga or Bundesliga or any other league. So it is, for me, it's a personal sacrifice. I mean, it's my club. I support them. I watch them. And I feel that when I put that money towards that streaming service, I'm helping the club out a little bit too in terms of generating revenue, etc. All right, Kartik. So we've mentioned a bunch of the top teams already. What for you about, and we've mentioned some of the Americans too. What about Josh Sargent at Norwich? It was a difficult season, right? Norwich got relegated, but the second half of the season, Sargent came alive more so, got more playing time, scored some great goals, and really kind of gave Norwich more of a fight. Now going into the championship, what's the outlook for Norwich City? Is this going to be another yo-yo season and with them coming back up, do you think?
I actually don't think so. Obviously, that's been their history, their recent history, and the last two times they've been relegated. They've come, the last time they were relegated, they came straight back up. The previous couple of times they were relegated, it took them a couple of years to get out of, well, the previous time it took them a couple of years, the time before that they came right back up, and the time before that it took them a couple of years. But they're a yo-yo club, right? I don't think they're going to be able to bounce right back up again this season. It's an aging squad. It's a squad that I think has kind of hit its limit in terms of where they can go. Production from Timu Pukki, I don't assume will be as good as it was 2 seasons ago in the championship or 4 seasons ago in the championship when he really broke out, right? I think that he's going to drop off. Adam Ida is a player I like a lot, Irish international up top, but he's fought consistency and injuries. And I think they're a team that really needs some reinforcements and some reinvestment, and they haven't gotten it because their model very much has been this yo-yo thing. Todd Cantwell, a player that's dropped off pretty significantly in the last year or two.
He shows so much promise in the beginning, though, right?
In the Premier League. I thought he'd be at a top club by now, to be honest with you.
Me too.
So that's where I am on Norwich. I don't think they're coming back up.
So what about Hull City, right? Because Hull City is a club that did well last season at certain periods. Obviously, were recently in the Premier League a few years ago. But what's the outlook for this season, Kartik?
I think they very much could be fighting relegation most of the season. They were scrappy last season and really benefited. So I think the thing we have to understand last season about the championship is because of the points deductions for both Reading and for Derby, and Reading ended up staying up, but Derby would have stayed up without the points deduction, and Reading would have been clear instead of fighting relegation without the points deduction. It kind of changed the situation at the bottom. So I think that this is a side that needs to be overhauled and hasn't really been overhauled. They managed to stay in the division, though. Once they got relegated from the Premier League, they struggled immediately, but they've kept in the division, unlike Sunderland, unlike Wolves a few years back. When Wolves were relegated under Mick McCarthy, or they sacked Mick McCarthy right before they were relegated, but when they were relegated that one season from the Premier League, they went down, right down the next season. I had to bring Kenny Jackett in, the manager you're familiar with, to get him back into the championship. So I think that they're going to really struggle this season. They have some nice parts, but I think every team in the championship does. But I don't think they're going to be very good.
Yeah, that's what makes the championship really intriguing, too, is going into a new season, is that it's really difficult to predict who goes up, who goes down. There are some exceptions where it's a club that's either spent a lot or spent very little, and you kind of think, okay, well, this team has got a good chance of going up based on the players they bought, or this team has a good chance of going down because they haven't spent hardly any money and they've got a so-so team in terms of talent. But Hull City, I mean, you mentioned that they need a turnaround. They need to go kind of do an overhaul within the squad. They have started out okay this summer, though, in terms of transfers. Out of all the clubs in the championship, Hull City have spent the most in this transfer window so far. It's not a lot. It's 12.5 million. But that's more than what River Plate has spent during the same time period. And out of the 8 players that they've signed, this is interesting, Kartik, out of the 8 players they've signed thus far in this transfer window, 4 of them are coming from Turkish clubs. I think one of them's a center forward from one of the Turkish clubs. So, and Turkey, I mean, Turkey could be a undeveloped league in terms of signing players. I mean, there's definitely a lot of talent there. It's kind of a raw talent. It's a little bit unproven, mixed with a whole bunch of veteran players. But we know that there's some good talent in Turkey. So perhaps maybe that is their key to unlock this championship season.
Yeah, their manager is Georgian, is a former Georgian international who I'm familiar with because he played with Georgia Kinkladze, one of the great Man City legends from the era before the Man City takeover. Arda Zlade, and he has managed in Turkey. I know he's managed a bunch of places, but I do recall him managing, I think, multiple clubs in Turkey. So he would know that league pretty well, although he's pretty far removed. I think that was about 10, 15 years ago when he was managing in Turkey. But that's an interesting place to go. And you see, this is something for people who don't watch the championship a lot. You see a lot of guys come from what you would consider second-tier first divisions in Eastern Europe, and then from lower-end first division clubs in the Netherlands, Belgium, Austria, those sorts of countries. They seem to make their way into the championship more than you would think for a second division. But we keep saying it's a second division, Chris, but it's also the sixth richest league in the world, behind the top five European leagues, the top five first divisions in Europe. So it's actually a richer league than the majority of first divisions in the UEFA Confederation.
Wow. Yeah, and the market value of all the players in the championship, it's over £1 billion. So it's certainly a lot of talent there. Speaking of talent, though, Kartik, I mean, if you were looking at this league right now before the season starts, oftentimes there are some chairmen with itchy fingers who are ready to kind of pull the trigger to say, like, hey, I mean, we'll give our manager a few weeks at least to see how he does. But if he's not getting the results we need by mid-September, late September, we need to get somebody in soon, because we're a club that maybe is in massive debt or is banking on basically the club getting promoted back into the Premier League to go ahead and get some more money into the club and help pay off some of this debt. There's several clubs that we've seen in the Championship of recent years, including Birmingham City, including Derby County, and many others that have had massive debt and have been penalized for FFP, for breaking FFP, and having either transfer embargoes, etc. But who for you, which club or which manager in the championship needs to be looking over his shoulder in the next kind of month or two in the championship, do you think?
Well, club, I think, is Birmingham City. They've just had to take over Maxi Lopez, the former Argentine international, Barcelona star, is involved in that. Is hands-on, actually. Saw him in Birmingham with his partner. I guess partner is the guy who has the money, right? Probably completing the takeover. But I think that that's a club that's just had one problem after another. If I said a manager was on the hot seat, the first name that comes to mind is Steve Bruce,
yeah,
who took over West Brom last season. Thought that they would have a quick return to the Premier League. I have rated Bruce maybe a little too highly, and been very defensive of him in his previous jobs, but he really botched it up when he got to West Brom, and it's fortunate he's getting a second chance at this and getting a full summer to retool the side. He took a side that had played expansive football that was built effectively by Slaven Bilic, right? Playing expansive football, getting promoted. I think we all thought the Bilic sacking was cruel, but they brought in Sam Allardyce. So we said, okay, they're bringing in a survival specialist. They didn't survive because it was tough to get a Bilic side to play the Allardyce way. But even worse is after Valerian Ismail didn't do a good job. And I thought that was a good hire for the personnel they had, but it didn't work. But it didn't work. It didn't work relative to expectations. It was still working a lot better than it was when Bruce came in. Bruce really botched up that team. And I think he will be gone very, very shortly in the season if things don't turn around before the World Cup break happens. And then the one other manager I'd say is really under a lot of pressure is a new manager, John Dahl Tomasson at Blackburn. Tony Mowbray got Blackburn about as far as I think they can with their finances and their personnel and with their lack of investment from the Venkies group, right? So, and they didn't get promoted that whole time, although they, you know, they've been solid. They've been good. And maybe a little too leaky at the back, but that's Tony Mowbray football. Those of you who've seen him at any number of his previous club stops as a manager, but very exciting on the attacking side. I think now the expectation is they somehow break into that top six with Tomasson, and I don't see it. So I think he might have a short stint.
Yeah, another club which I'm surprised by, Kartik, is Watford. And I'm surprised because the Pozzo family usually, I mean, hires and fires managers just kind of willy-nilly just throughout the season. However, in this regard, they've gone to a relatively new manager, Rob Edwards. He joined the club in July. He comes from Forest Green Rovers. But this one seems to be more of a, I don't know if they're thinking like almost like a Graham Potter, taking somebody yes. that has experience kind of more at the youth level, and at Wolves, I think at the youth level too, or the academy level, bring him through to Watford. And in theory, go for the long-term plan. Say, hey, rather than hiring and firing managers at will, let's get somebody that's younger, that's talented, and who's going to go the long course and get us promoted back to the Premier League.
Yes, that's my understanding is completely that Watford went out after all this rotation of managers, bringing in some young managers from the continent who didn't get the job done, bringing in experienced hands like Ranieri and Roy Hodgson who didn't get the job done, Nigel Pearson at one point they had hired, right? They've gone through some managers twice, right? They cycled through Kiki Sanchez-Flores twice. My understanding is Rob Edwards is being brought in for a long-term build, not just from, okay, we have a stability with a young manager, but also stylistically what he did at Forest Green is they play some very attractive football, even though they were in, and he got them promoted out of the fourth tier, but they were in the fourth tier for the last few seasons. So that's the thinking. The other manager I'd mention in this regard, Chris, just real quickly, is Michael Beale, who's been brought in at QPR, the club I tend to support in this division. Very unpopular decision to sack Warburton, the previous manager, who had been really instrumental in building the way QPR played stylistically, giving the club that had cycled through managers from really their takeover in 2008 all the way through their time in the Premier League, their relegation, their return to the Premier League, their relegation again, some stability and a solid base of way to play. And Warburton is actually the guy who I would give a lot of credit to building what Brentford has sustained. He was replaced by Dean Smith, who was replaced obviously by Thomas Frank, and they've kept building on it. But I think he is with West London clubs has been a peach. So a very unpopular decision to part company with him, which puts Beale under a lot of pressure. But Beale is you mentioned Rob Edwards being the Graham Potter. I would say Michael Beale is the Steve Cooper. Right. Same kind of professional background as Steve Cooper. This would be when Steve Cooper was hired at Swansea, not obviously when he was hired by Forest. He was a known quantity because of his time at Swansea. But this is very much, hey, a guy who worked in the Liverpool youth system, then worked with Steven Gerrard at both Aston Villa and Rangers, you know, who Gerrard had taken from the Liverpool youth system. Also had a stint in Brazil at one point, if I remember the club's press release, which was kind of a strange thing considering his rest of his history was with Liverpool or with Liverpool links through Steven Gerrard. But this is a guy who I think is going to be under immense pressure. But because they sacked Warburton in a very unpopular fashion, I think he's probably going to get the whole season.
It is interesting how like a lot of these clubs too, Kartik, have this coaching philosophy or playing philosophy where it is playing the right way, playing the ball on the ground, playing a certain system and playing your way out of the championship, which can be done. And that's the beauty of it too, is that you bring in a manager who is younger, who doesn't have as much experience, and you give them some of the transfer funds to get some key players in. And just like we've seen at Watford, possibly this season, and QPR, possibly this season, we've seen the same thing with Swansea City. I mean, yes, they haven't gotten promoted, but recently, was it last summer, hiring Russell Martin as the manager from MK Dons. And at MK Dons, he played this very attacking-minded philosophy that was kind of high on kind of pressure up front, but was susceptible to a lot of goals conceded on the defensive side. And Swansea, looking at this season too, have gone through a little bit of a rebuilding. They sold Flynn Downes, one of their talented midfielders, to West Ham United for $11 million. And they've brought in a couple of defenders. So Harry Darling from MK Dons and Nathan Wood from Middlesbrough, as well as signing Joe Allen from Stoke City on a free transfer. So Swansea's also the same philosophy kind of in terms of QPR, Watford and other clubs trying to play their way out of the league, relying a lot on free transfers or loans and trying to find, spend wisely to get its players at a bargain, or maybe players a little bit younger, given the experience that they need. We saw that last season with Ethan Laird, who's from Manchester United, a right fullback, and played for several months at Swansea City, did amazingly well, and then got loaned to Bournemouth and helped them get promoted back to the Premier League. And now for this season, hopefully he'll get some playing time at Manchester United.
Chris, I have to ask you, as a Swansea fan, and I hate to put you on the spot like this, but my view is, if Steve Cooper had gotten any investment at all from that ownership in the two seasons he was there, he would have gotten Swansea out of the division. Do you share that view, or do you think I'm being maybe a little too revisionist and favorable towards that manager? Because, of course, he did get forced out, I think, with probably an inferior squad out of the Championship the next season.
Yeah, and actually when he joined Nottingham Forest as manager last season, they were bottom of the table. And this was before Derby County got penalised for the financial irregularities. So, yeah, Steve Cooper got them from bottom of the table and got them promoted to the Premier League. I'm a huge Steve Cooper fan. I still am. I believe in him. I like his methods. I like his coaching philosophy. I like his man management. I loved his press conferences. So we'll get into Nottingham Forest probably in the Premier League preview that we'll do next week. But yeah, for sure. I think with more funds available to Steve Cooper, just that one or two players could have made the difference to actually get them promoted into the Premier League with Swansea. However, he did really well too in terms of the loan system, bringing a lot of players from Conor Gallagher, right? He was a star now at Chelsea, was great at Crystal Palace last season, brought him on loan. Morgan Gibbs-White, a player who's been bounced around a little bit from Wolves, but a lot of transfer speculation about him. He was brought in on loan to Swansea City. So he leveraged a lot of his contacts as a former England youth manager and was able to bring in some players that he knew from the national level and bring them to Swansea, and which was fantastic coups. But yes, they should have gotten some additional funding to get some players that could have just taken them over the edge to get them into the Premier League. Okay, so let's leave it there for the podcast. We will be back tomorrow with part two of the Championship preview for the 2022-23 season.